Here we go.
Neutron, proton, mass defect, lyrical oxidation, your irrelevant mass spectrograph, your electron volt, atomic energy erupting as I get all open on betatrons, gamma rays, thermal cracking, cyclotron, any and every mic you're on, transuranium, if you're always uranium, molecule spontaneous combustion, pow! Law of definite proportion, gain weight, I'm every element around. Lead, gold, tin, iron, platinum, zinc. When I rap, you think iodine, nitrate, activate. Right, uranium, the only difference is I transmit sound. Balance with some balance, then you add a little talent in. Careful, careful with those ingredients. They can explode and blow up if you drop them and they hit the ground.
All right. Welcome to Spark Science, sharing stories of human curiosity. My name is Regina Barber DeGraff. We are broadcasting out of the Spark Museum here in Bellingham, Washington. I teach physics and astronomy at Western Washington University, and I'm here with my co-host, funny guy, Jordan Baker. We are going to talk about computer science today. Resistance is futile. What do you think about robots, Jordan?
I like watching them on TV when they destroy the other robot.
Right, but not humans?
No.
We have two real computer scientists here. My good friends. I'm just gonna lie now. They exist upstairs from me at Western Washington University. There's Dr. Perry Fasano. Hi.
How's everybody doing?
And there is Dr. Aaron Clausen. Did I say that right?
That's right.
Oh, good.
The son of Claw.
Yeah. Okay. I like to explore the idea that computer science and, like, engineering aren't the same thing. I think a lot of people get those confused, right? Like, we were just talking about, like, putting together a computer versus, programming a computer aren't the same thing.
That's right. I mean, but at the same time, I think there's a very gray area about what's computer science and what's mathematics. What's computer science and what's electrical engineering? What's computer science and what's psychology? What's, you know, things like that. We're on this borderline. Right, so there are certainly things that cross all these disciplines.
Right.
So
I'd like to talk maybe about that some more. Let's talk about that. So, like, what are the, like, interdisciplinary things that I think maybe will be the most surprising? So, like, you just said computer science and maybe psychology. So give me an example of that. Because that's what... That's
a brain-computer interface, right? So to understand... So we need to have people that understand how the brain is mapped. What parts of the brain do what? So, you know, there's examples over the last few years of people that were quadriplegics who haven't left the wheelchair for years and years and years, and now they can put on a hat with sensors on it or whatever and have a robotic arm pick up a glass of water on the table and bring it to their mouth and drink. And that's the first time they've been able to do that maybe in their whole life. And it's because their brain works perfectly fine, but their body doesn't. And now they can control a robot by just saying, get that glass over there on the table. And they think that, and then somebody's figured out what parts of the brain are, that, you know, those signals are going to that they're exciting, and reading those signals to then move the robotic arm to feed them or drink, give them a drink. You know, that's very inspiring stuff, but that requires some sort of neuroscience psychology angle to it. It requires a bunch of electrical engineering for all the signal processing of the brain. It requires computer science for the blending of all those disciplines and implementing that. So
yeah, I think that there, like you said, there's a disconnect with the public of knowing how computer science or technology in general, how it, like, affects their everyday life. So I mean, like, I think they're very much aware of a smartphone, but I mean everything, right? There isn't, like, you can't go
pick a field, health, medicine,
right?
Marketing, I mean,
farming.
You name it. I mean, the pilot, you know.
Oh yeah.
Astronomy. More data is coming in from space than we can even begin to process.
Right.
We're gathering data at an astronomical rate.
Very good.
Unintended. Well, we were talking earlier at work about this analogy between, when people think of computer science technology, they think of just computers. Like I was saying, they just think of their smartphone. And I think you'd made this analogy. What was it about the, like, computer science is to... Do you remember that?
Oh, so this is a quote that's it's usually attributed to Dijkstra, and I did some digging, and that's apparently questionable now. But it's computer science is as much about computers as astronomy is about telescopes.
Right. And that really hit me because, like, as a astrophysicist, astronomer, whatever I am, I am very illiterate in telescopes, I guess. I don't know. I've never really worked with one too much. We've talked about this on previous shows. I know how to deal with the data. I'm very interested in astronomy, but I'm not really interested about how the telescope itself actually works, right? So, I mean, I think that that's something that hopefully our... I think we're up to, like, maybe 4 listeners now. We keep on saying 3 listeners, but 4 listeners can learn from this is that, like, you know, computer science is about problem solving, not building computers, right?
Right. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of abstracting problems. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I actually like this example. So I was sitting in on a class at our local high school over at Sehome, and it's their AP computer science class, and they were talking about sorting, which is just a great topic for algorithms. Because everybody knows how to sort and get a deck of cards, you have to sort them. How are you going to sort them? There's only about 9,000 different ways to sort them. Okay, it's a little hyperbole.
Yeah. You're talking hyperbole all the time.
8,423. Yeah. And so one of the students said, you know, if they're doing all this in Java, and Java's library has a built-in array.sort, so why do we need to learn this on our own when the system already does it for us? And I was... with the, you know, teacher who was actually from the industry, is a computer science or a software engineer, not the actual teacher of the class, said, it's like, well, you know, somebody had to write it, or, you know, maybe you're going to be in an environment where it doesn't, you know, it's not there. To me, it's a little more fundamental than that. It's, you know, I get papers from students every quarter, and I have to sort them. I'm doing the work. I want to know the most efficient way to sort those papers so I can get grades in. And it's bubble sort.
Bubble sort.
That was a joke. Bubble sort's a terrible sorting algorithm. I was hoping Perry would laugh. But, all right, fine.
We don't get jokes.
Yeah.
No, no. I like how we're laughing how we didn't get jokes. Okay.
So, just a quick question. Sure. You guys were talking computer science, and you had mentioned software engineering. Is that... how closely related is that? Because I really don't... I mean, you're saying computer science is super broad, but is there some people who do the software engineering and then some people who...
Sure. To me, there's like 3 fields that get confused. Like, one is information technology. And this is the, I can't fix your computer. And the way I finally got my parents to stop asking me to fix their computers, I just installed Linux. Fixed. That one you get.
Yeah, that one I get.
So, yeah, so I think what Aaron's saying is the IT field is that, you know, the people that fix computers, build technologies, work on infrastructure, routers, right, things like that. Okay, and then there's computer science, which is more of an academic discipline, and software engineering, which is kind of a vocational arm of computer science to say, oh, I'm building software, and that's a very common industry task, right, where you have to, like, you work at Microsoft or Amazon or Google, you build software that people consume, or it's a product that people consume, like a search engine or a, you know, photo sharing site or whatever it is. And so, you know, all those people kind of, they're all like, could be a computer science degree, but they've gone off into these sort of areas. Some schools have degrees in software engineering, information science, information technology, but.
With the IT degrees, there are more vocational, like, transfer 2-year degrees that are IT ones.
Oh, I mean, yeah, and there could be, I mean, there's plenty of people in IT that have PhDs, or they,
right,
you know,
yeah,
they do hard stuff, right? But they're, but the field itself is, there's definitely a lot more, like, entry-level stuff without degrees or with 2-year degrees that you could go and have a very successful career in doing information technology in.
Now, I think closer to the point is that it's they're all interrelated. It's probably the same foundation degree, perhaps, but it's 3 different fields. And it's, you know, I can manage my computer, but I am not an IT person by any stretch of the imagination. I know how to use a crimping tool and I can make a network wire, but that's the guys who know what they're doing really know what they're doing, and that's not me. And when it comes to, like, software engineering, writing code, there's some... And I'm just going to wax on. So there's also, to me, it's I think everybody should learn how to program. I think if you're going to have a computer or a smartphone or whatever, you should be able to make this thing do whatever it is that you want it to do, not what the app developer wanted it to do or whoever gave you the software. Customize it to do exactly what you want. And that should be like, that should be a normal interaction with the system.
But it's very intimidating, like, for me.
Okay, and it's funny you say that, because after our meeting, I came back to my office, and actually between Perry's office and mine, is Catherine Potts, who's another one of the teachers at the CS department. And so I asked her the same question you had asked right as we left. It's like, well, what do people think? What's the misconception? And she said, oh, the misconception is that CS is hard.
Yeah.
That it's this magic black box, that it's voodoo, that it's, oh, it's way too hard for me to figure out. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was joking at the beginning with Will I Am. I said, you know, there's been this big push to say, oh, get everybody into computing, right? So there's this 1 hour of code thing that you can do online that anybody can do with no background. Go do it. It probably will take you way less than an hour, you know, if you're into it. And it starts to get you to the heart of like what it is to write computer programs, and it's nothing
right.
more than just a series of like logical things. If you can give somebody directions to your house, you can write a computer program. If you
people
can write
don't
a recipe,
like logic classes.
Well, but it's not. Yeah, yeah. It's just a sequence of steps. It's like a recipe or something, you know.
The distant future. The distant future.
It is the distant future. The year 2000.
We are robots.
The world is very different ever since the robotic uprising of the mid-90s. There is no more unhappiness.
Affirmative.
We no longer say yes. Instead, we say affirmative.
Yes, affirmative.
Unless it's a more colloquial situation with a few robo-friends.
If you're just joining us, this is Spark Science. My name is Regina Barber de Graaf with my co-host Jordan Baker, and we're speaking to Dr. Aaron Clausen and Dr. Parafisano about computer science.
Finally, robotic beings rule the world. The humans are dead.
Talking about this public perception of computer science let's talk about like the perception like back in like the 60s, let's say. And like I'm really fascinated by what, you know, society or any community, academic community, predicted what would like the technology would look like in so many years, right? So like I think Aaron was bringing this up at our previous meeting about the movie 2001.
Okay, I have looked all over to get the quote and be able to cite it. So
okay.
This is at this point a rumor because I haven't been able to find it. And the way the story was told to me was that after 2001, the movie came out, that computer scientists got together, and it was probably at a conference. It was just some throwaway little panel to discuss the movie, because HAL, this computer system that runs the entire spacecraft, goes berserk, and I hope I'm not ruining this for anybody.
It's
tries
was,
to
it
kill
came
everybody.
Out. When did this movie
say,
come
if
out?
You're spoiling something that came out 60 years ago,
yeah. I'm sorry. Spoiler alert: we're going to be talking about the movie 2001.
Dang.
Continue, Aaron.
So they went through the movie and they took it scene by scene to try and identify what was believable by the year 2001. So this would have been 1970. So we're talking, you know, 30-ish years into the future, and they said by 2001, talking to your computer and having it talk back to you, like HAL does, like a normal person would do, would be totally believable. We will accomplish that in 30 years. But playing games with a computer was completely unbelievable. There's a scene where they're actually playing chess because, you know, in 30 years, you never waste computing power playing a game.
Because their issue was, like, memory, right?
Well,
like
memory
power.
And expense. It's
yeah.
like, this is back when we thought, you know, in 30 years, a computer will weigh, you know, less than 1.5 tons. Which, again, I think is not a real quote, but
it's but
it's
nice the same
to
thing.
Talk
Bill
about.
Gates said something similar, like, why would anyone need one of these in their house? Why would everybody need one? I don't know what the quote was. But it was something along that sentiment of, yeah, we're building this operating system, Microsoft, whatever, but even they didn't think that this would be ubiquitous to be in every single home,
right?
You know, that sort of thing. So,
wow.
And it's not in my home, by the way. Just kidding.
Well, so this idea of AI, you know, like that we could be talking to these computers and they'd be able to answer us in a an intelligent sort of way.
Totally believable.
Totally believable.
I buy it. You know, like Siri, if Siri worked.
If Siri worked. Yeah. So when did Siri come out? What year was that?
5 years ago.
It was about five, yeah.
Something like that.
So Amazon also has this new thing called Alexa. Have you guys heard about this?
Oh, the tube that sits on your desk.
Yes.
Yeah. I put myself on the pre-order list for that, but I haven't
really?
I haven't heard back.
Oh, my sister has it.
Oh.
You're missing out.
I guess I wasn't high enough
but yeah,
on
I mean, those
rating list.
Those voice
if only they knew I was going to be on the radio. I mean, we get free advertising because it works so well.
They can be our fifth listener.
Right. Get them in Alexa.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, there's no intelligent conversation that's happening, right? And I mean, we're in 2015, last I checked. So I mean, it's funny what these predictive, like, these predictions.
Okay, but wait, if we go back, this is like Eliza period. Where Eliza?
I don't know what Eliza is.
It's an island.
It's an island
off the coast of.
So there is a program called Eliza that it's text based. So you type in your comment and you press enter and it texts back. It types something on the screen back to you, and it's spooky, because it's like as you're talking to this thing, it's supposed to be
a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
So you say, Eliza, I hate my mom, and then Eliza says, why do you hate your mom? And then you say, because my mom beat me when I was young. And then Eliza says, why do you think your mom beat you when you were young? And all Eliza's doing is repeating back what you say, but in a question form.
Mm.
Right? There's nothing spooky about this. I mean, come on.
Why did your mom beat
right,
you?
Yeah.
Well, I think
and so, but it goes on like this. And after about six questions, it deteriorates into, I'm sorry, can you repeat what you just said, something?
That's to bring back to Alexa, the Amazon thing. She does say that. Like, we asked her, how old is Scott Bakula? And she's like, I cannot find information about what you are saying. And we're like, how old is the actor Scott
really
Bakula?
She spoke loud.
Right, I put the word actor in there.
Oh, good.
So,
okay,
and then my brother-in-law is like, well, maybe Scott Bakula, and I love Scott Bakula, but Quantum Leap. Come on, guys.
Okay.
Quantum Leap. Anyway, so my brother-in-law is like, maybe he isn't a big enough actor. And I was like, no, that can't be it. And so my brother-in-law goes, Alexa, how old is Tom Cruise? And she's like, Tom Cruise is 50-something years old. And so, yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, it just deteriorates, huh?
Well, I mean,
it deteriorates as much as you try and fight it. The reason I find it spooky is because it's a simple little program. But you can actually detect some, like, real intelligence there. That it is, it's, like, forming sentences, and it's asking you questions, and it's almost carrying on a conversation. But it's, so, again, we're talking, like, 1969, 1970, to say, let's take that technology. And, yeah, you know, it does get kind of thin after a while, but this is what cutting edge was in 1960, and they're looking, you know, or 1970, they're looking 30 years in the future. That seems like, I mean, all you have to do is put voice recognition on top of that. How hard can that be? And you know we'll have that in 3 years.
And when we should have been tomorrow's too, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Are you tying this into a previous show? Because I know you had this on.
Well, we actually just
You're
talked about 2001.
Oh, okay. Okay.
In the Interstellar episode.
Nice.
Which we have to have Kevin back. But like, are there other predictions that you can think of? Like when you were studying in school, like high school. Or like way, way back when you were like little, or something that your parents have said about predictive, you know, things about technology that just did not come true or did come true? Any memory?
Well, I can remember when I was at Western the first time that we were talking about the day when it won't be if you have a computer. It would just, that's just an assumption. And I know my professors told me that, and like, I didn't believe it. Because it's like, you know, I think I just spent like $800 for 4 megs of memory to upgrade my computer. You know, there aren't going to be people who can afford this. And now it's, if you ask that question, it's how many, not if.
Right.
And I don't even think I can answer that question
there's
right now.
Six in this room or something, right? Yeah. Okay. I don't know what else to say about that. I feel like it's the pace and the, you know, how it's gotten more powerful and also cheaper, right? That's what's made it ubiquitous. So
right.
In your car and, you know, whatever, self-driving cars. Or right.
I was
the
blown
corner.
Away by, like, the web, that I could go on the web on my phone in, like, 2000, right? And,
right.
Like,
right.
And it was just, like,
and the first
really
time you got on
pixels.
The web was when?
I
mean.
in like 94 maybe.
Okay.
90.
Yeah.
I just got into high school.
Yeah, so our undergraduate school got on the internet. Virginia's making us feel old.
No, it was 95, sorry.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah.
It's ubiquitous, it's everywhere. And it's so integrated in our lives that at some point we won't know where humanity begins and technology, you know, ends or begins.
Sure.
Or whatever.
Sure. And even even going to things like pacemakers, hearing aids, right? I mean, this is old technology that is being incorporated into people, right? And so laser eye surgeries and things like that, technologies. And just, I mean, is that pure?
I'm still thinking about your mental link to the robot arm. I'm on a robot arm right now.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, who doesn't want a third arm?
Exactly.
Right.
Right. How much more I could get done during the day.
I just lost my train of thought of like, because now I'm thinking about robot arms.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think, so we keep on referring to this previous meeting. I talk to Dr. Fasano and Dr. Clausen a lot. We were in the same building. So we talked about this idea of like using technology for games. We talked about that. But also like just this kind of virtual reality. You were saying that like at some point, you know, there's going to be this time where we no longer want to talk to each other.
It could happen. It's maybe
this
right
time
now.
In the far out future.
Are you tired? Are you trying to kick us out? Is that what's going on?
No.
I'm just kidding.
I want to get to, you know.
Yeah.
Virtual reality.
Well, I mean, and I think
and
that
robots,
it's this blending, right? It's this
yeah.
blending of the humanity versus the technology. And I mean, how many people do you see walking down the street just looking at their phone and not looking at the sunset or the next person walking down the street, right? This happens all the time. And so, but it's, and I guess it's because they feel it's more enjoyable than looking at the sunset or saying hi to the person walking down the street. And so if you can start to tap into that, imagine if, you know, whatever your greatest joy is in life that
TV.
TV. So if, but you know, that's
someday
that's already kind of
far
set
off
it.
Future,
yeah, right.
You're gonna be able to get TV in your phone.
Wow, yeah. I can't wait for that to happen, and I
right.
don't go over my data, you know.
Right.
But yeah.
You know. Yeah. So we'll have to work on better compression algorithms so you can get more data for less.
Actually, it was just yesterday. I was walking in because it's been so nice in Bellingham. You know, I can walk to campus, get stuff done. And I was walking to campus, and I remember looking up from my phone and seeing three guys coming out of, like, the Arboretum, you know, and walking up to campus. And they were all looking at their phone, and they were kind of in a line, and they were obviously not hanging out together. Like, they didn't know
right,
each other, but
right.
they were, like, walking in a line, looking at their phones. And I kind of laughed at myself. I'm like, they look ridiculous. And then I realized I had just been looking at my phone, you know, walking down. And I look just like them. But yeah, you're right. It's
And so then take it to the next level where you put on some goggles. Okay, so say for other people, maybe their greatest joy in life is something more than TV. Maybe they would
I don't
say,
know who these people are.
Well, they might say like interactions with my daughter or something.
Oh, I love my daughter.
Okay, there you go.
We watch TV together.
Oh,
there you go. And so whatever this greatest joy that you have, if I could just put a helmet on you and just press a button and you feel that joy, then why wouldn't you do that all day long?
If Dory and I could play Harvest Moon, like together, like in virtual reality, I don't think we'd ever leave.
Right. So there you go. So that's my point. So resistance is futile.
We would have our fake farm, and it would be great. Do you know what Harvest Moon is?
No. Is that like Monopoly?
No. It's it's an RPG. It's fine.
It's a rocket propelled grenade.
It is.
Excellent.
No, but there's
most people don't play rocket propelled grenades with their daughter.
Right, it's, but you know,
no.
it's
in
a
video
unique person.
Game form,
it's
probably.
This is a new world.
Right.
Regina's on the cutting edge.
I am. No, but I remember a Star Trek episode that had Aaron might remember this.
I need a little more.
The Star Trek.
You know that Star Trek.
I got it covered. That was great.
There was a captain
and a spaceship.
They were in space. No, it was Star Trek Next Generation where Riker he goes on some vacation. He comes back with this headset that looks kind of like the Google Glasses, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he comes back, and it's, like, this highly addictive game because every time you, like, get a point, it like, shoots chemicals in your brain that, like, makes you happy. And then, like, the whole crew gets, like, basically addicted to this game. Ashley Judd's in that episode, though, which is really weird. But anyway, you talking, Perry, when you say, like, resistance is futile, like, we'll all get to this point and no one will want to interact. That's basically...
We could just bypass the experience part and just exercise that part of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. You just get the brain signals and you're like, wow, I'm feeling eternal joy right now. So why would I turn the button off?
Wouldn't you get numb to that, though?
Maybe you would. And then you'd say, this makes me more joyful. Do 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 do, and you dial the things, and then you'd be more joyful. And then you're like, I'm tired of this.
Right.
Make something more joyful.
Yeah. The only trouble with that story is that the more joyful would be like an upgrade. It'd be like an in-app purchase.
Right. Right. And then only the rich people will have it.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah. Unfair.
I don't know, all this kind of talking reminds me of the movie WALL-E, where they're all in their own little chairs and they have the little screens up and they're all too fat to move and.
Yep.
I love cruises,
for some reason,
too.
I'm just talking about this reminds me of that.
Well, but, like, that's what a cruise is, though, right? I mean, just like in WALL-E, like, you're getting everything that makes you happy. You get to, you know, relax. You don't have to move. There's endless buffets. There's the Lido deck, you know.
Unlimited Mai Tais.
No, but I get the point where it's like people started out walking on their own, and those chairs were just reserved for the elderly so grandma and grandpa can come to the Lido deck with you. And then slowly over time, everybody's in the chair. When WALL-E came out, I thought that was hilarious. It's like, that would never happen. And now I walk across campus and, like, everybody's looking at their phone watching TV as they walk to school.
It'd be much safer if they were in a chair.
Right. And they would drive themselves.
And they were on, like, a conveyor belt.
Right.
But they wouldn't bump into each other.
Well, we wouldn't need a conveyor belt because we'll have good algorithms to run the chairs so they won't crash into each other.
Like self-driving robots.
Like self-driving cars. Or robots or whatever.
Well, I call them robot cars.
Sure, they're robot cars. That's fair.
Yeah.
Finally, robotic beings rule the world. The humans are dead. The humans are dead. We use poisonous gases. And we poison their asses. The humans are dead.
Welcome back to Spark Science. My name is Jordan Baker. I'm with my co-host, Regina Barbara DeGraff. And we are talking with Aaron Clausen and Perry Fasano about computer science.
Affirmative. I poked one. It was dead.
This hover chair that you're in that thinks for itself, just like these Google self-driving cars, like, if they hit somebody, what happens? Like, who's liable, right?
They should be locked up.
Dr. Fasano brought this
up.
So, should the chair be locked up? Or should
the person who wrote the code?
The person who wrote the code? Is it the person who's in the chair?
I mean, no company will sell that chair without you signing away your rights. So they're not going to get sued. You bought the chair, it's your deal. And so I'm sure it will be the person in the chair that gets sued. Talk to your husband lawyer and you maybe will have some opinion on this, but it's probably going to be the person in
the
chair.
He doesn't specialize in futuristic hover chairs,
okay.
But
he won't
should
speculate.
Right.
He'd make so much more money.
It is a niche market.
Yeah.
It is a niche market.
Eventually he'll be at the leading
edge. So this is actually pretty similar to, so in one of the classes we do ethics, and there's an online story. It's called The Case of the Killer Robot, and it's brilliant. It's written as a bunch of newspaper clippings and copied emails, and the whole story is a industrial robot, so a robot arm, goes berserk and kills the operator. And according to the newspaper clippings, it was not pretty. The prosecutor...
We're terrible people.
Prosecutor in the story goes after the programmer for negligent homicide. And so you read all these articles and who did what and all the backstabbing and all the inter-office politics. And you're left with this question. It's like, well, is he responsible? Is the robot responsible? Is the operator responsible? Was the manager who...
Was it suicide?
Well, according to one of the clippings. So it's just but it's along those same...
So is this a textbook or is this a...
It's actually online. It was a university. I wish I had written it all down.
That's all right.
Five
listeners will look
up. Please look it up.
Yeah.
It was written specifically as an ethics dilemma for computer science. It's because everybody in the story is at least in a gray area. And there's all kinds of talking points in there, like, you know, what moral responsibility does the robot have in the whole situation? I think he should be locked up.
Well,
that individual robot.
That individual robot. We should have
unplugged.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that would be like a capital offense.
But I mean, like, but that brings me finally to my favorite point. This is why I asked you guys on the show. Uh-oh. I want to talk about robots. Okay, and so we're talking about this robotic arm. If he, I shouldn't even say he. This is sexism again.
Jeez.
You anthropomorphize.
I called the Curiosity Mars Rover he. And I shall be putting up on our Facebook page why I thought that. I found the image. But that made me think.
Is there something? Is this
got a
safe
big rear end?
Right?
It had a monocle. It looked like Mr. Pennybags from...
Right, yeah. That's what you thought. But everybody calls it a girl because it's got a big end.
Well, no, because ships are... Or things of exploration are like in cars or women or something. Anyway, let's... That probably should
that's
be
a different,
I don't know,
that's
but,
a different topic.
I don't know. But yeah, so is this robot liable? Is it a person? Once we actually start getting to the point where we can have conversations with our computer, Siri works, and so does Alexa. She knows who Scott Bakula is, you know, stuff like that.
That's the Turing test. Do you know who Scott Bakula is?
That's when the robots are smarter than us, and
that's right. That's right. Then it gets to a point of like rights, right? Not only are we signing away our rights by, you know, everything we sign online with, like, you know, Facebook and whatever. I'm so old, I don't know what else people do. Snapchat.
Instagram.
iTunes.
That's what I'm saying. Read one of these, you know, license agreements, whatever EULA is, end user license agreements.
Right.
They're disturbing, right? I mean, you say, oh, I'm going to put my data in the cloud, or I'm going to do this. And then the thing says, sure, do whatever you want, but we're not liable for any of the, you know, anything.
So, yeah, our responsibility is, Perry, you had said something like deflection of responsibility. So, like, responsibility deflection.
I don't actually.
So, again, previous discussions. But, like, yeah, this, as we're signing away all these things for iTunes, it's like a deflection of responsibility from iTunes.
Sure.
Like, they don't want to have that responsibility. And like you said, like, the hover chair that we've been talking about, right, the company doesn't want to be liable for that, and they'll never be sued, right?
Right.
But, like, getting to the point of, like, then what about the robot, right? If it becomes actual...
Well, that'll be the turning point, right? I mean, there's plenty of tools, right, that even Siri or whatever, right, is working to learn your voice if it's your phone and it's dialing it in to, you know, interact with you better. So it's changing. The Siri on your phone is different than Siri on someone else's phone.
It's
in
true,
some
they're
sense,
individuals.
Right? Like in that sense, right?
I don't have a phone with Siri.
Well, I don't either. but my point is just that there is that tailoring of the software, right? So it's, you know, somebody wrote the code, but then it was its experience. So it's like nurture and nature, right? The nature is what the code is, and the nurture is all the experiences it had. And so who's responsible for that? Did the person who wrote the code not understand that it would experience these things and then turn into this?
Right.
That's kind of hard to...
And what's our responsibility?
Right? I mean,
right?
I mean, at some level, right?
You could apply that to children, too. It's
sure,
like, well,
of course.
You know, nurtured them up, and all of a sudden they, you know...
Yeah, they became a serial killer, so the parents aren't responsible.
Oh my God.
If their son becomes a serial killer.
What a crazy analogy.
You took us there.
Well, it's true. Well, I was taking to, like, you know, enslavement of robots, but you went somewhere else. Wow. Yeah, if there is a killer robot, right, maybe they should be.
Perhaps they should be turned off.
Right.
Well, but they can always be turned on again.
Okay, but take this from another direction. So there was,
I
was trying to find the reference to this, but some researchers took, like, part of a mouse brain and mapped it into a CPU. And allowed it to, like, functionally replace that part of the brain. So the mouse kind of did his mousy things, but part of the thinking was offloaded. So let's do that to people, right? We perfect the technology, and we can actually just copy the neurons and whatever's going on inside your brain into some supercomputer. Does that program have rights?
Right.
Okay.
That's where I'm trying to go.
All right. And we make a copy. So as the human, the source, did I somehow lose rights? Did I create them? Do they get duplicated?
Is it a conservation of rights?
Is it? But at the end of the day, we can turn those computers off and turn them back on, and we have yet to figure that out for me.
Right.
So, well, the off part, I guess we have figured out, is the turning it back on part we're still working on.
Right.
So, as much fun it is to talk about data and, you know, all the other times we anthropomorphize these devices.
Data from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Data from Star Trek The Next Generation. Sorry, sorry.
Right.
That was a Star Trek reference.
Yes.
You know, at the end of the day, we're talking about machines that we can turn off and turn back on. And, you know, I have a vacuuming robot at my house. And
Roomba.
Well, we call him Sir Upton Cummington Kincaid.
Every single person I know who's owned a Roomba actually names it. Every single one.
Do they all name it after
I've known
Butler?
Three.
Mine's Bob. Because I have a Bob sweeper. I got the cheaper version. So, did you turn Bob on? Yep.
So nobody's impressed by Roomba, right?
Well,
I mean,
I'm
that's
impressed.
Not when you're saying like I'm impressed by robots or I want to talk about robots. I mean, people are over
right.
Roomba now, right?
Right.
I mean, it's fun when a cat rides it.
Right.
Like, that's cool to see.
I did see the police robot though, and I was fairly impressed by that.
Oh, the bomb defusing robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
most of that is not intelligent, right? It's like controlled.
Right.
Remotely.
The
Bellingham police robot.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if we can go upstairs, but maybe. But like the idea is that somebody's out there controlling it, either remotely or from some 50-foot-long cord. It's got a camera. It's got an arm. It's got a puncher
right.
and different things like that. To, you know,
well,
technical
for diffusing
technical.
Bombs, I hope that cord is longer than 50 feet.
Yeah, right. maybe they put up like a little.
He's not a bomb expert.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, I think you're right, right? It has to have, for myself to be impressed by a robot, it actually has to be able to make some decisions on its own.
Right, right.
Plus,
okay, there was a
B, look good.
B, it's got to look good.
It's got to look good. I'm totally shallow. Go ahead.
Like Rosie from
the
Jetsons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She looks good.
Right.
She looks just like a maid.
Yeah.
Exactly. The Roomba comment was more about, you know, my Roomba will every once in a while vacuum up the cords that are on the floor and just totally destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
And I still use them as long as it still powers my iPad, but I don't blame the Roomba. Like, man, Sir Upton, you're fired. You know, no recharging for 24 hours. You know, usually it's, I don't know, usually I just get mad. I know, I should get even, but...
No.
You know, but it's the same kind of thing. It's like, so our hoverboards smash into something else. Well, it's just an accident. You know, the software is doing what the software is doing.
What was your Roomba's name again? Sorry.
Sir Upton Cummington Kincaid.
Sir Upton. I'm just going to call him Upton. If he looked like an actual person, though. See, that's the problem. When they start actually having, like, a head and two arms, maybe you would get more mad. That's what I mean. Like, it has to do with how they look, right?
Okay.
I mean,
so
you don't think
the
so?
More
so
human,
there's a
the...
face you could slap him around or something?
We're all violent creatures. Just me. But you don't think so? I mean, I think that...
No, I see how that's attractive. It's like, oh, okay, you look more and more like a human. I'm going to... give you more and more human expectations and responsibilities,
right.
But it's still a lump of plastic.
But I think it's going to be hard for people once we get to that point to actually make that distinction.
It's hard
right now
for people dealing with other people.
Can't we just talk to the humans? A little understanding could make things better. Can't we talk to the humans that we're together now?
No, because they are dead.
Binary solo.
0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000001 0000
and we are talking with Aaron Clausen and Perry Fasano about computer science.
The humans are dead.
Once again, without emotion, the humans are dead.
But I think it's also like the data thing from Star Trek.
Very true.
Okay. It's like how far in the future is Star Trek? But
25-something.
Okay, so 500 years, and we still can't make
skin,
like, that looks like human skin? Like, it's just going to be... I mean, all that's going to happen, right, is that we're just going to implant technologies into bodies. So, yeah, Aaron Clausen or whoever, you know, like... Okay, you have. We're gonna plant this in you, and that in you, and this in you, and so you're still look just like you do, but you're being controlled by all these machines inside of you. I mean, that's way before Data, who's not part human, right?
No, he's all robot, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's my point. It's gotta. There's steps before the all robot thing that is amazingly adept and smart and all this. It's the augmented human,
right?
That is, you know, all powerful or whatever, because you have great memory and you have great logical and computational abilities with your brain, because you're all like just human, plus we've added all this stuff to you to make you really great.
Right, so I mean, placing robotic devices in a human, that makes it cyborg, I believe, right?
Yeah, so I mean, okay. that's the step, right? I mean, that's easy. I feel like that would be,
that's already what we're doing,
right?
Data.
Like, right, we're, yeah. If I give you a hearing aid, right, that's a lot easier than building an ear.
The robot arm that we all want.
Yes.
The robot arm that we all want.
Yeah.
It's easier to build like a machine in there that can move your current arm when your elbow breaks.
Right. And this thing that you're talking about, this integration, I mean, it's already kind of happening, right, with the Google glasses. Like, you can pull
up right,
everything.
That can control limbs,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Well, I was thinking of, like, you wouldn't even need to integrate things. Like, I was listening to a story that had... a guy, and this was in like the 90s or early aughts, talking about yeah,
I thought I was the only one that called it the aughts.
I watch TV. Some people use it. Nothing of that comes out of my mouth is original. So this person, he had built a computer, which is like the early kind of prototype of these Google glasses, and he had this computer basically pull up documents that he had typed in. So let's say he's having a conversation with one of his friends, and as he's having the conversation, he's taking notes. So like, this is what we talked about on February 8th, 1999. And then the next time he talks to that friend, that information starts getting pulled up, you know? And he made it so he would never have to forget anything. He feels like learning something and then forgetting it was just this giant waste, right? So after a while, his personality kind of changed. He got better at talking to people because he actually remembered what they had talked about last time, that they have children, whatever. And slowly it started, this question was, where did he stop, right, and the computer begin? Because he's getting this constant assistance. Like, he has this robot assistant the whole time. So, like, I think you don't even need to insert things to start this integration between human and robot.
I get that.
I don't know.
Huh. Yeah. It's the same thing at a dinner party when it's, you know, who's Scott Bakula or how old is he?
How old is Scott Bakula?
You know, it's like my body of information now includes Google.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Or who's doing the talking
it's
to?
It's Amazon.
Amazon.
Yeah. Alexa.
Okay.
Yeah. They should just all give us money. I mean, period.
Yeah, or at least a free trial or something.
Right.
Maybe Alexa. They could replace us with Alexa, and you could interview Alexa next time.
Never mind.
I've tried. She does tell jokes. She can be like, Alexa, tell me a joke. But unlike
it's like
my
garbanzo bean and chicken.
Right. Sorry. Our listeners can look up that joke, which is inappropriate. But like Jordan here, you know, he has years of experience, improv, you know. And his timing's probably pretty good. I don't know. I'm sure it is.
Wait for it.
Yeah.
Yep, it's pretty good.
So anyone who has Alexa, ask her a joke. And she is terrible. Like, she'll tell the joke, and then she won't give you time to think. She'll just give you the punchline right away. So, I mean, they got to work on that. She's like, knock, knock, who's there? It's just like, apparently. And then she just tells you the joke. Like, she doesn't give you any time. So, I mean...
It's like
just...
the interrupting cow.
Yeah, yes. She's exactly like that. So, I mean, yeah. There's more ways where we can kind of make these robots more human.
So what you're saying is we need to focus... The computer science world needs to focus on more and better algorithms to tell jokes.
Yes.
Well, and, you know, of all the things that we work on, right, it's much easier to build things that... predict what TV show you're going to like.
Oh, yeah.
Then what kind of joke or to make a joke or to create art, right? I mean, all these things. So, you know, maybe what we're doing, you know, people always bust on computer scientists about being, you know, soulless, whatever, creatures of, you know, technology. I don't know. Maybe some people do. And so
that's what the comments say. Never read the comments.
Yeah, right. No. Don't read the comments. But maybe what we're doing is freeing humanity to just do art all the time and improv.
Yeah.
Right. So we don't have to handle all these mundane tasks. Like.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, except for if we get actually serious, the DARPA competition with the robots to help with, like, disaster. Have you guys seen this?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll just, yeah.
I was going to post the video of on our Facebook page, but it's so funny how the public thinks of robots. They actually think maybe data from Next Generation is just, like, around the corner, you know, like, you know, these, you know, more humanoid robots that can be our best friends just around the corner. But, like, and then you watch this video of these, like, disaster response robots, and they're just falling over, and, like, they can't even open a door. And they're supposed to be able to do this not only by themselves, but with, like, remote control. And it's very frustrating. Like, one of the tasks was, like, walking upstairs. And, like, there are these robots that just can't even walk upstairs, you know? It's which is a very hard task, right?
Right. I think what you're seeing, though, is the difference between people that are letting robots learn how to do tasks internally and not programming them, like, this is how you walk up a set of stairs.
Right.
You shift your weight, you do this, you lift your leg, you shift your weight, right? Because that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like creating that algorithm that says, here's how gravity works, here's how motion works, now you figure out how to walk.
Yeah.
Right? And then the robots learn and they fall over and they do all these things when
yeah.
they're confronted with something slightly out of what they've seen before.
Yeah.
Right? And they don't adapt. And that's... So that's what you're seeing is the difference, right? But I mean,
right.
there are robots out there, right? Like the, what was the company that MIT just bought? Some company bought, there was some MIT project, Boston Dynamics or something.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the name of it is. I'll have to edit that out. but it's like some technical, it was some company that's built, so they have these four-legged robots, and these things can run 55 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, I saw those,
yeah.
where they're
I mean,
just like a basically a torso and legs.
Just a giant torso with legs,
yes,
but they can
yeah.
cover any kind of terrain. They
right.
can, you know, they're cruising along, right? I mean, these are for real
yeah.
robots. But they're programmed to this task, right? They're not saying learn how to walk as well.
Right.
Right? So a lot of these DARPA things are like, if you're going to be disaster recovery, you have to...
You have
be able
to think
adapt,
on your feet.
Think on your feet, and you have to be able to adapt to the situations.
Right.
Right. So.
Well, I think, at least for me, as somebody who likes, you know, reading sci-fi novels, watching these movies, we have this idea of this very humanoid-looking robot, and I think we have this expectation that is just not being met right now, you know.
Because we're much more concerned about the task.
Right,
right,
exactly.
Than the looks. And
right.
so just take the evolution
right.
of computer programs, right,
right,
or computer science. You know, back in the 60s and 50s or whatever, when people were writing computer programs, your interface was typing. There was no mouse. There was no graphics,
right?
Right? And that's how a lot of us still interface with the computer a lot
yeah.
of the time, because it is incredibly efficient, right? Once you understand how to interface it with this text-based, the mouse feels incredibly slow and laborious, right?
Like... What are phones going to look like in 20 years?
Nothing.
No. There's no phones.
There is so much research going on right now today in augmented reality, where the idea of having a separate device that isn't, I mean, we're talking Google Glass, that isn't like projected right into your eye. At the very, you know, low tech is just, you know, a pair of glasses that present something over the top. That's today. So you go out 20, I was thinking 30 years. Is, you know, the idea of having a phone, of a discrete device that's going to be your connection to the world.
That's separate from you.
Yeah. It's going to be all the time, every time.
Within 20 years, you though? You think that that's going to happen?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The distant future.
It is the distant future, the year 2000.
We are robots.
The world is very different ever since the robotic uprising of the mid-90s. There is no more unhappiness.
Affirmative.
We no longer say yes. Instead, we say affirmative.
Yes, affirmative.
Unless it's a more colloquial situation.
with a few robo friends.
If you're just joining us, this is Spark Science. My name is Regina Barber DeGraff with my co-host Jordan Baker, and we're speaking to Dr. Aaron Clausen and Dr. Perry Pisano about computer science.
Finally, robotic beings rule the world. The humans are dead. The humans are dead.
Right, and so you look back and you say, oh, this all happened in the last 5 years. But then you look at the last, like, 50 years before that of computer science, and as much has happened in the last 5 years as those previous 50, if not 100,000 times more. But you see what I'm saying? And so then why that whole span of 5 years now will get compressed to whatever, a year.
Do you think that growth is going to stay? I mean, you're talking about exponential growth, right? And like, do you think that that rate is going to be sustained?
I guess it depends how you define it. But, you know, in the 70s or 60s, the founder of Intel made that prediction about exponential growth in terms of what we can fit onto a chip. You know.
Yeah, what was that quote again?
You know, it was every 18 months, the number of transistors that they could put onto a chip doubles.
And because of that, because you're doubling the amount of circuitry on the chip, you're also halving the distance, right, between things on the chip. So then you're making things faster. So you're making it more dense, quicker, cheaper at the same time. And so all of this has fueled our current state, right? But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's all like we feel like that law, Moore's law, Gordon Moore predicted that. But we feel like that's flattening out. Like we're not packing more and more and stuff on the chip just in the last few years, right?
But we've hit, as far as I understand, the sort of the theoretical limits of what our transistors can do. So we're at clock speeds now where we're sort of fighting physics. Again, if the physicists would step up and...
quantum computing.
It's not my fault.
That's the next step.
I should have somebody on here that talks about quantum computing next.
You can have Seth talk about quantum computing.
I don't know if Seth's going to want to do that.
So at the
he doesn't even listen to the show.
Right. Oh, well, that'll be number six.
Yeah.
So at the speeds, we're talking about the clock cycles of high-end computers. We're talking, you know, 6-7 gigahertz. Light can barely get across the die. So I'm like, how fast? We can't get information from, you know, one unit that needs it to the other side of the chip. So now all of a sudden it's, you know, we can't pack in twice as many transistors because they're getting so small that tunneling effects take over.
Yep.
So the transistors quit working. So we're as small as we can get. We're about as big as we can get. The next thing is to pack multiple cores onto one die where, light can't get across the die, but we don't need to. We're going to segregate our dies down to, you know, 4 processors or 8 processors or however many. So, we've sort of been enjoying this exponential growth, but it's going to be different. It's going to be...
Right. Now it's like the exponential growth is coming from the number of people and the number of projects and things that are going on at once, in my opinion. There's more people working on technology for computer science today than there have been ever in the past. And so that's continuing to grow if you look at Western's enrollments in computer science. It's through the roof. And the reason for that is students are coming in. I want to do this. It seems like the coolest cutting edge thing I can do or something. It's challenging. There's lots of jobs out there, whatever it is that excites them. But now, you know, you get that pile of people working on things, and now we're just going to keep knocking one problem off after the next, right? And so, you know, solving chess or checkers, right? This is trivial to us now. Like, you could write you could have a college student write an artificial intelligence to learn how to play simple games, you know.
We still haven't mastered chess simple.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, it's just
okay.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's simple, right? So I guess all I'm saying is that, you know, we still can't do Go. We still can't, what can't we do, right? So now we conquered Jeopardy or whatever, right? The IBM computer that played Jeopardy. You saw that?
Yeah, I did.
Right.
I like how you're like, we did. We conquered it.
Well, I mean, just like as a not me, or I'm just saying we as a humanity
through
conquered
robots.
Right, through robots, right? And that's like a big powerful robot to play Jeopardy.
Right.
So I mean, in the terms of the future, I don't know. I mean, medical diagnostics, you want predictions? It's like medical diagnostics.
I
think every doctor is going to be well versed in interfacing with a computer to do diagnostics. I think a lot of science is going to be driven by discoveries of computers. I think there was something last week, right, that they, you know, all these human experiments that we've done over the years, not experiments on human, but humans have carried out biological experiments. And, you know, all the data's there. They fed it into a computer, and the computer said, these three genes are responsible for this behavior. And no biologist has ever figured that out before. Mm. And so it's kind of a thing, oh, okay, so it's aiding scientific discovery. That's not saying the computer's smarter. The humans did all these experiments that fed the data to the computer. But
data
then the computer made a conclusion that the humans didn't see, right, about that. And so I think it's going to aid every aspect of education, healthcare, you name it. I mean,
do you think there would be some sort of like a matrix sort of thing with like a jack, and maybe not like the back of their head, but like something to go through like a diagnostic thing of what's wrong with somebody? Or
sure, I think there's going to be planted, you know, or... I think your bloodstream is going to have numerous like small nano robots, if you want to call them robots, floating around your bloodstream.
Nanobots.
Okay, there you go. Taking measurements, reporting wirelessly back to some computer to say, hey, there's something going on in this vein that's constricted.
Years.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Oh, I think even sooner, perhaps.
Wow.
That's all. I think that's very doable. Because the technology is very achievable. Like when I say that, you can't be surprised about anything I just said. Oh, a small thing in your bloodstream reporting wirelessly to some computer. I mean, this is not beyond us.
There was a movie
us.
About it in the 80s.
Oh, there you go. So well, you have some predictions. I want to hear those.
I don't have any.
You said you had predictions when we started this.
Did I really?
Yeah.
My only prediction is that my wish is the whole Star Trek tricorder. The one that you can actually, like the diagnostic, you were talking about that. Like you could have, not the tricorder, what was it? What is it called? I think it is the tricorder.
The tricorder.
Yeah, okay, good. Where you can like scan somebody and you can be like, oh, you know, broken rib, you know, and then, you know, and it wasn't just the tricorder that I really liked in that medical part of it. It was also the kind of like injecting the medicine through like some sort of, I don't even know, through the skin or something without needles. I kind of just basically want Star Trek to be real. But, I mean, reasonable. Reasonable. The scanning, the medicine.
The spaceship.
I mean, the spaceship and time warping, I've kind of, you know, not in 20 years.
Okay.
But I think the other two things. I mean, holodeck, that would be awesome. But that's
teleportation.
Not gonna, teleportation, I don't think that's going to happen in 20 years.
Okay.
But I think the medical stuff in Star Trek, maybe we can do that.
So there is an XPRIZE out right now for a medical tricorder.
Right. Yes, there is.
So,
and that's
I'm sure
why
that's on its way.
That's why I think 20 years, I think that's an okay.
So it's $1 million prize or something.
Yeah, it's $1 million. And there's like, I think seven, it has to diagnose seven different, I don't know.
Illnesses.
I mean, people have built apps, right, for third world countries where you can take a drop of blood, take a picture of it, and it can tell if you have some particular disease or another.
Just
but not any
picture.
Disease. But yeah, just a picture of your blood cell on your cruddy camera on your phone. You know, not even like a microscope or anything, right? Just like a.
I think
and it only works for a couple of different things or, you know, stuff like that. But the point is that people are, you know, the technology is out there, right?
Right.
I think I told you the other day, it was like, if there's X people in the world, there's 0.9X cell phones in the world. So 90% of the number of people.
Yeah.
It's not saying 90% of the people have cell phones, because maybe some have two. But, you know, the number of cell phones
right.
is approaching the number of humans on Earth.
Right.
And so that's ubiquitous technology. So if you got some health care thing that could work through that device or some other socially impactful app that work through that device, you could make an impact worldwide, right? And
so,
I think that's the power of sort of where we're at today, is that you really can, with just your mind and a device that is not very expensive, create something that can make an impact worldwide and globally change society. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
I think we're gonna stop there.
Okay.
All right. I wanna thank you, Dr. Fasano, Dr. Clausen, for coming to talk to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
No, because they are dead.
This show was recorded at the Spark Museum on Bay Street in the heart of Bellingham, Washington. Our producers are Suzanne Blaze and Katie Knutson. Theme music, Chemical Calisthenics by Blackalicious, Wonderland by Janelle Monáe.
Come on, Sucker, lick my battery.
Our feature song today is Robots by Fly to the Conchords. Join us again next week at this time. If you like our show and would love to support us, please go to KMRE.org and click on the button Donate.
Here we go.
Neutron, proton, mass defect, lyrical oxidation, your irrelevant mass spectrograph, your electron volt, atomic energy erupting as I get all open on betatrons, gamma rays, thermal cracking, cyclotron, any and every mic you're on, transuranium, if you're always uranium, molecules, spontaneous combustion, bam! Law of definite proportion, gaining weight, I'm every element around. Lead, gold, tin, iron, platinum, zinc. When I rap, you think iodine, nitrate, activate. Red uranium, the only difference is I transmit sound. Balance with some balance, then you add a little talent in. Careful, careful with those ingredients. They can explode and blow up if you drop them and they hit the ground.